God dag, alle sammen, og velkommen til den andre NIS-lecture i dette. Kan du mute, kanskje, Margrethe?
Mute. Jeg kan mute, for du
står foran deg. God dag, og velkommen til andre NIS-lecture i semesteret. Det er veldig hyggelig at det er så mange på plass i dag, etter en dag med mange presentasjoner også i går. Og i dag er det Margrethe Raaum som skal presentere for oss. Hun var jo på podiet i går også, og kommer igjen i dag med kanskje litt mer innovervent, en sert sett litt mer innifra. Så vi gleder oss veldig til å høre fra deg i dag, Margrethe. Vær så god.
Vi ser. Prøv å, hvis jeg står her, det høres bedre ut antagelig. Ja?
Ok.
Ja. Jeg får holde meg bak her. Okay, so my name is Margrethe Raaum. I'm from the Computer Emergency Response Team at the University of Oslo. I have been leading that team since we designed it in 2006. And for the last couple of years, I've been on the steering committee of FIRST. That's Forum of Incident Response and Security Teams. Yeah, it's a mouthful. Okay. So, from the beginning, it was a question why we need a specific incident response, because the operational department had always treated and dealt with the security issues. But it's an organized and, importantly, consistent way of handling incidents. So it means that all the people in your constituency, they feel treated equally. That's important. And the management are very, you know, they feel safe and secure, and also they can show off to the to everybody else, oh, look, numbers, we're good. And also to minimize the damage and the cost, even though we're a university, things cost. And to minimize the damage, I mean, to make sure, for instance, when an incident is, or when we detect an incident, to make sure it's not spreading, to stop the spreading, to stop the leakage of information, whatever is going on. And to restore services. You have to decide each time, you know, is it most important to get the system offline? Are we still leaking information? Or is this in the middle of a sign up for students all over the country? So we actually do, we run Samordna opptak and Felles studentsystemer, so very heavy systems where restoring services would be primarily what we would think about. So, and we also ensure continuous improvement of the team, because after each incident we make an incident report, and this goes back into the policies. It can be as simple as, okay, we didn't think of that. No, you cannot put those kind of documents on the iPad. And that will be the maybe the conclusion of a tiny incident. Stupid example, but I'll get back to some more juicy examples. And we also have a control and function. I do see the problem of the dual part here, where we both, we handle the incidents, we give advice, and we also are a controlling function. But we're not that many people working on security, so we just switch hats. So today I'm here to tell you how to do things, and tomorrow I'll check up on you. Actually, they do the same thing at North Cert, so, yeah. Okay. Damn it. Okay. We'll try again. There we go. This looks boring. But what's actually a security incident is very, it's very relevant when you're in the middle of it. So I'll go through each of these and show you how this is not evident. So attempts to gain unauthorized access to a system or its data, unwanted disruption or denial of service, the unauthorized use of a system for processing or storage of data. Nobody would ever do that. And changes to system hardware, firmware, software characteristic, blah, 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 blah. So the first one, attempts to gain unauthorized access to a system or its data. So how well is this authorization defined? Normally, it's not very well defined at all. And you always have the system administrator. I mean, you have access to everything. You have the postmasters. They can access all the email, but they're not supposed to read the email. So if there's a particular problem, they would have to actually read the email and then try to unread it, which is difficult. I try to unread things all the time, because when we leak information and I see some documents right there, and I have to weigh how bad was this incident, so I have to look at the documents. I don't feel particularly good about that, but I have to do that, and that's so I'm authorized to do that, but I really should unread it. So it's not really clear, and some operational people have a wider understanding of their own authorization than they should. And also, how many trials is a mistake? And when should you know that you're not authorized to do this? If you go several ways to get to certain data, and you find at the end you find a way in, if it was open? So what was your motive? Is it okay if it was to reveal bad security policies? We had a student down, he was just proving that one of the lecturers actually left the exams open on his web area. And he downloaded it. That would have been easier if he wasn't going to have that exam, but he was. And so there was a lot of trouble. And I knew for a fact that his intentions were just to show bad policies. But of course, they couldn't totally believe that. And you always have the hacker defense. You know, might have been me, but somebody must have hacked me. It's always something to think about. That's part of the problem we had with like copyright complaints, because people would say, no, I didn't do it. And you can't go any further than that, because you say, okay, so according to this company, it was this IP address at this time, and that was you, or at least your computer. There's so many insecurities there that you just, so they can say, I didn't do it, and go, okay, good for you. I have a funny story about copyright complaints I can take later. Unwanted disruption or denial of service. I shouldn't use the word stupid, but you know, I'm not saying any of our developers are stupid. There are stupid developers, and they will make bad code. You will have operational people who will do configuration errors, and how to tell the difference between a website that can't really handle normal traffic at a high level and malicious input packets. Well, it's a lot of work. And before you know, you don't know whether you have a security incident or not. And network loops, that's my absolute favorite, because people will deny. And if you just have a network loop, it's the network people. If it's denial of service, it's most certainly us. Oh, okay, I'm in both groups. So, but we will ask people, did you do any configuration changes? And I said, no, didn't do it. Okay, so what I find is that I can ask, so if you didn't make any changes, we will have to escalate this to a security incident, which means we will go through the whole of your network and take it apart, and we will be here maybe for days. So, okay, I did the changes. Yeah. Over there, the hub. Did that do anything? No. It's always a key question. We had at one time our network was really swamped, and it turned out to be a compromised web server, some homemade code. And but the problem is, I didn't think it was a security incident either. I thought it was some network loop or a spanning tree gone wild or whatever. So when we actually realized that this was a security incident, we already had compromised some of the evidence. That's why you should always be careful about deeming it not a security incident. These are American numbers. I willingly admit the numbers are probably much higher in Norway, and also in an academic institution, it's just everybody uses everything for personal purposes. I mean, when I started at the university for the first time, people didn't have email accounts. So my email account is that old. So it is my de facto email account. Trying to transfer people to Gmail after some 25 years, maybe more than that, that's difficult. What's an unauthorized use? Like, you shouldn't load all your holiday pictures onto a university computer. Yeah, that might happen. And also, when you have your own, bring your own device. So you use that device for work purposes, and the workplace buys you a computer, but you put all your personal stuff with you and you take it on vacation. It really shouldn't be as meddled as it is, but the rule about what's a security incident, this just has to go. And also, same problem with ownership, because changes to system hardware and firmware, I mean, if it's a computer right there at the university, and things will be changed for operational purposes. So that's one thing. And also, who's the owner, and who rules over the computer? So if operations don't do it, will people update? No, probably not. When we started, we had to look at what kind of laws that apply to us. Laws and regulations, internal university rules, and we had to make an acceptable use policy that pulled in the same direction. They also have to be understandable, and in at least two languages. And I'm talking about Norwegian and English. We looked at what kind of services we could provide. This is like from CertCC. What is the normal? This is a large scope. I mean, this is a large incident response team. We don't do all this. We do incident handling, of course, analysis of the incidents and coordination. And we don't have much support on incidents that are not on site, because we don't have that many. We actually do have a site in Rome, but we can't leave it to them to do the handling, so we just bring it all in. Wish they would send me to Rome. Are you watching me? Rome. And We do vulnerability handling. That would be looking for, we always scan our own network. We have a carte blanche to just to scan and look for vulnerabilities. And we also, we're on a ton of email lists that, you know, tell us, oh, there's a vulnerability in this and this. And we have to look, do we have any in that version? It's tricky at a university because there are no strict rules. You can always, we have, like, for instance, WordPress in several versions. It's just a lot of work. We do some artifact handling. That is, we get a mirror image of a disk, for instance. We get the memory off of a compromised machine and do full analysis. That's only once in a while. We do technology watch and announcements. We have, like, security audits shouldn't really be us, but since, then again, we're the security people, we do that too. We don't do intrusion detection. It's, you need one person full time to have this efficiently going, at least. And that's something we had to, you just have to choose. What are you not gonna drop? And we do some training. We should do more, but we're a little low on people right now. So when we started the team, you potentially take over responsibilities that somebody else has in operations, and I just made up that name. So I'm Roem, and the head of security is Grøndahl. So this is the model. The organization will start out with a shock, and there will be massive resistance. They will fight you in any way they can. They will suggest that you're redundant. Or maybe say, suggest to the management that they should evaluate the usefulness of your group. And when it's clear that this is not going to work, there will be some passiveness. And then people start to think, I may be able to use this for my own good. That's the acceptance phase. And then, unfortunately, some come into the disclaimer phase, like, oh, no, I didn't know I was supposed to do that, because we have the security group. They were supposed to update all the Windows machines, weren't they? That's the idea I got. And then you have the, this is a word I made up, securityfication. That's when everything becomes security. Oh, yes, looking at that, no, I think that's security, their responsibility. So then you have to work along to agree on what tasks belong to which group. And if you're in a period of where you have too few people in general, this fight will be slightly harsher. It's very important where the team is in the organization, because I use the word stealing hours. You know, we always fight about the hours. You have a deal that people are going to work. We usually say that 20% should be the least amount of hours, because you need if you're on duty, if you have the weekly meeting, and you actually do need to read some emails and articles and be slightly updated, and also there's training. So altogether, 20% isn't a lot, and the fight there will, you all of a sudden find that someone is writing internal operations as cert hours, and this, yeah, this, I think this is quite normal. And also, having someone high up, you can, if you find some grave security problem, you can say, you know, this should be corrected. Now, if I say that, the problem is when I started the team, we didn't have a CSO. So that was I helped design the CSO function. And someone originally thought that the CSO should be under IT operations section for servers, group for Unix systems, something like that. I was like, no. CSO needs to be up there, right beside the directors. So I needed someone to go to and say, you won't listen to me. So you can say, oh, yeah. It is important. And also, I use the word operations, that they don't meddle. It sounds very negative. I didn't mean it to be. But we had the first large incident not very long after the team was actually started. And it started out in operations. One of them picked up, you know, a log and said, huh, that's weird. This is an FTP server. Bad news. And as we started rolling up the incident, it turned out being 250 users, two servers, 30 regular computers. A lot of stress. And we needed to do forensics on several of the machines to be able to correlate, because there seemed to be maybe two incidents at the same time. At this time, we realized we didn't have enough people. So we went to operations and said, okay, I need some people here. They said, oh, okay, yeah, go ahead, take a pick. And so, but they were located in, you know, a slightly different area of the building. Also a problem, it turned out. And they didn't use chat, like IRC, which also turned out to be important. Because keeping control of what they were doing was pretty impossible. I knew what everybody was doing. I was just busy coordinating. I couldn't do anything practical at the time. And I went over to those guys and I said, so what are you doing? Oh, I'm on this server looking at them. And I said, oh, no. You're not supposed to log on to the server. But my boss said that I should log on and look at that log. And I said, oh, no. Oh. No, you weren't supposed to do that. I told you should do this and that. Yes, but it is a good idea to look at that log. And so you see, his boss is a technically good person. He's just not used to not treading in the evidence. And that was a big problem. After a while, we realized all timestamps were totally screwed. And we, from the phase of trying to find out who was doing this and when it started, we went into a phase where we said, okay, just make sure we have all the computers and users involved. And then we'll just write up a report that will end up, yeah, we don't really know what went on. Actually, we did find the culprit, or it was a local IT person that had, it was to help his users. He had downloaded a boot CD from a website in India. So he was the person who had actually installed all the... It's like the doctor who's spreading the disease. It's poetic in a way. You also have you must be have the mandate to say, this is, just reinstall, or... Oh, no, this is bigger. We need a mirror image. Or, this is horrible. All our social security numbers are out. Or, large disaster then. Probably goes without saying. So our team members are technically proficient. And they're from their each area. So if you sit there with an IDS or a NetFlow tool or whatever, and you look at the logs, and you, all you know is that tool, you are missing something. Because if you have a, if you already work with a network or Unix or Windows or whatever, you've seen other things and you know things about the protocols. So, yeah, but this is not a security incident. I've seen this before. It's Cisco's weird protocol for blah blah blah. It really helps in incident handling. But if you see, there's one point that says technically proficient, but also personal qualifications very important. Calm, very important. And patient, because if you're gonna, you're both going to search for something that you don't know, at one, some phase you don't know what you're looking for in the file system or in the network logs. You have to be pretty patient. And also large logs. You have a good imagination, because you have to be, you have to think, what has someone been doing? Tidy, or else the evidence will be all over the place and not usable. And also discreet, because if you start blabbing, the whole organization are going to run around, I heard that. We had that happening one time, and well, after I talked to the one person, it didn't happen again. But that was pretty bad. And also, like, the victims should hear it from us and not from some colleague in the corridor. Very important. Some people need leadership skills, and it's not enough with one or two, because you might have parallel cases going on. But not all have that, so that's fine. I mean, some are just better at looking for key evidence, and some can coordinate. And people skills. Not all investigators should be allowed to talk to end users. But it's important to have a set of people, and we also do training on the people skills part. You know, never, ever be patronizing, even if the person is horrible. Don't. Because it's a defense mechanism at the user side, or especially if it's people who are well-educated and they feel like this shouldn't happen to them. That will be a tricky situation, and you'll just have to, you know, the fur way. And also you need to talk to operations, need to talk to leaders. Operations, they need to be more practical and say that, okay, give the technical reasons to why they cannot use their system right now, why they can't just reinstall. And leaders, that's a good thing is having automated tools that gives nice, you know, graphs. His plan. So it's important to being known by the community, and that's tricky, because and you have to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. On the phishing side, we were really good. We kept on. We worked a lot, and then all of a sudden we see that okay, people are reporting phishing. Numbers going down, compromised accounts, yay! And then we thought, okay, turn around to something else. Oh, big mistake. And also we forgot about warning of a malware as an attachment, because that's very old school. That's how they did it in the olden days. And also incidentally now. And also you need an easy and non-aggravating reporting procedure. And the reason I say that, because some teams have this huge web form, and you have to fill out all the fields, and you just get, I'm not going to report this. We've actually discussed this on the international list, and there are many like me. And you need quick and soothing answers, you know. I'll take care of it. I'll look into it. Just relax. And the triage to everybody who knows triage, hand up. Okay, goody. Triage is, you know, when you have a large, more physical incident and the doctors come in and they say, dying, dead, hospital. It's the quick and dirty, what are we able to save? So it's called that in incident handling as well. It's, as I said, are we leaking information? We had some printers or multifunction devices. We all love them. For some reason, some of them had some documents on them. And at that point, you know, the first thing you need to do is, okay, block, then assess the damage, and then tidy up and look at the routines and all that, and how did that happen? It's actually not over yet, so I'm not going to go into that anymore. So is it spreading? That would be if you have a break-in. That's really important. The nice thing is to keep the system up and start looking at what they're doing, but you can't always do that. And also, do you need memory? Because if you do that, you do not turn off the computer. Or can we actually catch them, or can we find out who they were? I'm going to skip Titan and do that after I've finished this. What? All right. So we do detection, phishing. Yeah, we actually have honey users. So whenever someone makes a fake page asking for password and users, we always have like some. Most of the usernames are like Norwegian words for stupid. And then 34, and then we log on with that username and password, and we sit and monitor the email server for logins, because then we see who's actually using it. And there's a trend there, definitely a trend. We do some malware analysis, but not very thorough. We do have a sandbox, Cuckoo sandbox. If you don't have it, highly recommend it. There's one online as well called Malware. That's malwr.com. Very cool. Actually, it was down yesterday. I wonder why. So programs installed by our own users. We set up a test network. Network design, blah, blah, P2P support, information leaks. We also do some things that may... You could say, oh, shouldn't the police handle this? Well, they come to us first and say, I'm not sure whether this is a police matter or not. So that's the point. That's if it's a very serious case, we'll say, well, we can't touch it. If it's slightly innocent to look at the data, we will try the look and forget tactic. And we've had... Sometimes we have to come back and say we see no evidence of this at all. But there have been times where we come back and say, you have to report this. So then they know that we found evidence to support their concerns. We train the personnel. The training number two means like SOMS and those training that cost ever so much money. Black hat training, very cool, but very expensive. Try to do exercises, not as many as we would like to. And we try to stay in touch with other groups, other cert groups. That's important because we always share, oh, did you set up that solution? That sounds cool. Can we take a look? I'm actually going to another cert group this afternoon to look at their cool new stuff. okay. I'll do this quick. Yeah, large system, Titan. It's part of the, it's actually, well, it's now replaced by Abel, like Abel. But it was part of the Eurogrid. So, the reason I bring up Titan, even though it's not really, it didn't happen yesterday, is that it shows how we took a shortcut. Because I just stopped by, I was actually going to a festival. Well, not so much. At least not that day. Because I just stopped by the office to print the tickets. And there was a call, you know, I think we may have an incident. So the SSH daemon was logging to a file, everything. You think you have an incident? Really? So this was the master node. So this is like a vast file system. But there were three master nodes. And what I did first, there's an upside and a downside to having both network and security hats. One thing is that I can do these things just like that, block the network, for instance. But of course, I have to work with both things. So this is what it looked like on the file system. I'm not too happy about that. You see the C1 there? Yeah, a lot of... So this is only last time, this was August 9th. So you see it's reasonably, it just wrote to the file. So I informed Uninet in Trondheim just because, you know, I knew there were some collaborations. I didn't know, I was a little fuzzy about the details, but I called them. Thought it would be a good thing. And I also said, please don't bother me, because this is, it's going to be a lot of work. And then we realized that we have a sync between users internally at the university and the system. Bad news. And then I get a phone call from the Incident Response Task Force for the Eurogrid infrastructure, because they had seen that our system was down. I did not know we had a tight connection to them. I did not know of them. There's a lot of information that should have been there before this incident. I actually knew the guy, though, because I met him earlier. I mentioned the beer model of trust yesterday. Very important, because I knew he was a good guy. And I was pretty alone. So... And when we realized that this logging was probably, I mean, at first it looked like, okay, timestamp from June over in August. Bad news. And we do, normally I wouldn't do a stat because it leaves footprints. Here's the triage phase. You say that, okay, so could we look at the timestamps? Yeah. There's gone backup. They did the first thing operations did was to do an rsync. Thank you. And also that size of file system, you're not going to do a mirror image. So we just decided, nah, screw it. We'll just see what's been going on. We actually did have old NetFlow logs because we just switched servers. Normally we don't have that many, that much. But we did. Oh, they were huge. That was depressing. So we had saved binaries. We had images of the three front ends. Gambling that the people who had done this didn't know what they were, where they were, and what they had. Looked for binaries. So I'm not sure whether I'm clear about what happened in Sweden, because Leif, the guy I knew who was in the Eurogrid, he talked. He said that, you know, I'm here and I have a sandbox, and if you like, you can give me the, I can do some analysis for you. And that was good, because I was already dealing with the internal users. So he found a backdoor password. I sent him the binaries. Then he found a backdoor password. That was very cute. He found a quick way to find out whether you were compromised or not. So we just sent out message, okay, go on to your HPCs and just go do a grep for this on the SSH and see if it matches. None other in Norway, but yeah, also passphrases logs, bad news. So we found some distinct, we decided that this was the trace. They had installed, they had actually installed it by yum. That's nice. Very, very tidy. And the original files were deleted. And logs, they were tampered, but the timestamps weren't tampered well enough. So, here was what I found when while he was looking at that, I was looking at NetFlow. And this was my conclusion. So I had to start calling. It's the simplest way to do it. And met, I mean, they just, oh no, we always do that 2 o'clock in the night. Okay, goody. Astro, same thing. Uninet. Now, in England, not so much. So we decided, you know, I tried to get through, I got to the help desk. To get from the help desk to security people. Miles and miles of people in between. So I said, okay, just give this message. I'll send you a string to grep for. Please make them do that. Yeah. Was it ever a hit? We found the login that was consistent with the NetFlow logs. It was an existing user that logged in from a university in England. But that was only a login. Yeah. Do you remember that phase of everything is, or disclaimer, or whose responsibility of security? So they had reported this this bug, and we thanked and said, okay, thank you. And we will now patch it. Well, they thought, we have a security group. You patch it. Yeah. So, but we did find out which. So the bad news is here. See, it says 2010. You shouldn't be compromised by stuff that's a year old. That's embarrassing. But this is how to do it. Totally works. And then we started cleaning up. So, lessons learned. Some are really simple. There is a grid. Patching is complicated, but so is life. Yeah, the new system is more standardized. So it's patching is easier. And we are also now in the grid security system. And also logs must be, yeah, the logs were not kept outside the system. We normally do that, and now we do also for those. Yeah, I'll continue about the SOD attack later. That's like a reverse DDoS. One computer attacking a lot of... If you have that much power, you can take down a lot of sites. Okay, so the compromise was traced back to England, to the States, and to two or three universities in the States, and then it just kind of disappeared on the horizon. Yeah, this is more... Yeah, not so interesting. Okay. So that was... we did find out what happened, and we don't know who did it. But it did. Yeah, it was useful. And it's pretty clear that the person who did it didn't know what kind of power they had in their hands. Which is a good thing. Yeah. Any questions? Ooh.
Thank you, Margrethe. You used all the time, but I think we still have, we'll make time for questions, I think. So, please.
You operate according to any standards, ISO standards? Or?
There is no existing ISO standard for, there's one in the pipeline now. For instant response ISO standard, but we used RFC 2350, and also we're an accredited team with a trusted introducer, and they have a set of requirements. That's, you know, if you can. If you fulfill them, you're good. And also, you're checked up by someone else that you just don't check off in the box. You do what you say you do. And I think that's more valuable than checking off a box yourself. But I know there's some controversy on the ISO standard that's in the pipeline. So, but it's being treated in the incident response community as we speak. I saw there was some emails on it today. There is another standard. It's an IEEE standard. It's pretty similar. You know, it all comes out of the same material. So, but I'm sure there will be demands for ISO standardization after a while for some, especially commercial. So I do, it's pretty old, but if anyone would like samples, I can provide that. I still have that laying around somewhere. Also have mirror images, I think, if you would like to play around. All right, just let me know. Pretty easy to find.
Again.
Yeah. What was it? Oh, it was me.